Well, welcome everybody, or I guess welcome to me. Welcome back to me, I guess. I'm welcoming myself back, Clay. Is that weird?
Yes. Thank God. Elsa's back. You guys don't have to listen to me for another hour. Thank God she's back.
Oh my goodness. Listen, I think you got me out of a job here. They're going to be like, oh, she's back. Now she's going to dumb this whole thing down again. Oh,
no.
I'm back to dumb it down, guys.
This is a fair thing. This is a fair thing.
All right, listen, we're not going to dumb it down. We've got some great topics today. I joked just before. I'm going to make the joke again, even though it's semi not funny. We've got two Mikes and a Matthew we're talking about today, and we'll explain right after this. Oh my goodness. So, it was really a poor taste joke on my part there. I'm going to own it because, the last one there is a tragic one, a sad one, but, we're going to get to the other stuff first. So I guess it depends on how you feel about this guy, whether it's a, sad thing for you, or you could care less, or you're thrilled. We're going to talk about how we feel about it, but, Mike Pence has dropped out. He's the first notable, one to drop out. There was one or two others that are already gone. But I was surprised. Were you surprised or no?
I'm surprised this early.
Yeah,
I am surprised this early. I'm not surprised that he. I didn't think he was going to make it to even the final three. This early is a little bit shocking. I would have thought he would have made it to the, maybe the spring sometime. At least past the holidays into maybe March or something like that. But a lot of it has to do with money and funding. None of this stuff is cheap. I mean, I don't know how much that played into his decision, but, no poor people make it to the White House. You've either got to be independently wealthy or you have to have a lot of money backing you. But early surprise for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I did read somewhere along the line there that he did have a cash strapped campaign. So he was struggling already with that. And of course, he's got all kinds of struggles, I think, with the American people, and namely, probably right off the bat, maybe the most obvious is, as Trump's vice president, he in a lot of Trump supporters' eyes, he was a traitor to Trump. And I not a single one of them, I can tell you, got past that and said, I'll give him a chance. So he was already dead in the water for a really significant part of the population.
Yeah, we've been saying that if it's not President Trump as the GOP Republican candidate, whoever was not Trump but got his endorsement was going to be, that was going to be the one. And Vice President Pence was never going to get his endorsement. It wouldn't have mattered who the other person was or he was never going to get the stamp of approval from President Trump. So he was fighting a losing battle. Like you said, he was dead in the water from the get-go, very much like Chris Christie, I think is also dead in the water. I think there's room for negotiation with some of the other candidates that are still in there. But Vice President Pence he was done, truthfully, before he even got started. And I think do you think he thought he could overcome that? Do you think he thought, in his head, he could beat the opposition between him and President Trump?
I just, I tell you, I just feel like he went, it's hard for me to, because I don't think he's a stupid man by any means. But it's hard for me not to believe that he went into this a little delusional. I don't know how he thought he could have or would have gotten around that or blasted through that. Maybe there's arrogance there. Maybe, there was a level of arrogance thinking that, what he was running on is much better than, anything else that he has to offer. Because obviously he's got a very dry personality. Some people will say zero personality.
Yeah.
And, there's just so many things about him, I think, that put too many portions of the American public off, you know, and there are some people that would say he's too conservative. You know, there's always the twos, yeah, this and that. And he was mocked throughout. And I don't agree with that personally, but that is a thing, you know, people maybe want, if they don't want Trump, they want someone who's a little bit moderate. And I guess they don't see him as being that. But I think the biggest nail in the coffin for him was his role in J6 and the elections and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, he was doomed. But I do agree with you that I thought he would have lasted longer.
Yeah, it's, we're starting to see some interesting things take shape in the election. Both sides of the aisle. Obviously, this, like you said, this is the first notable casualty, you know, in the election so far. Kennedy switched from being a Democrat to an independent. I mean, that's very different from, mm-hmm, you know, Vice President Pence taking, I think, what did they say? He paused his campaign.
Right.
I think that has something to do with what they can do with the funds. Like, if he doesn't shut it down, he can still use, I don't know. But anyway, he's the first notable casualty in all this. And then, you know, you've got Kennedy moving from Democrat to independent. I think the interesting speculation that I've been seeing a lot lately on the Democrat side is Gavin Newsom.
Yes.
He's playing a lot of global politics in the name of being the California governor. Yeah, you know, he is the California governor, but, you know, taking trips to China, probably a little bit out of line for a state governor. And I understand it's coastal and, you know, the ports and all that stuff. But at the same time, that's overstepping. There's a lot of speculation out there that they're waiting. He is the heir apparent,
right,
for the DNC to finally come to the, you know, well, we can't back Biden anymore. So they're going to, mm-hmm, throw Newsom in there as a last minute, but I don't know.
It's actually really, you're right. It's really interesting in so many ways as far as what the Democrats are going to do, who they're going to put forward, because whether they're saying it or not saying, everyone knows Joe's done. You know, he's just a mumbling puppet right now, and nobody really has any high expectations. So there's a lot of maneuvering that's got to be going on in the background. I'm sure you remember well that there's still mumblings about that, although I think it's somewhat squashed. Michelle Obama has been tossed around out there as a possibility. But I think, you know, so far the standard answer has been that she has no interest. That doesn't really mean much, you know.
Yeah.
You know, with the amount of time that we have still before us. But yeah, it wouldn't be any surprise whatsoever to see Gavin Newsom move forward here. You know, they all know as much as they know about Biden not being anything of any value at this point. They know that likewise, Kamala Harris. Same thing. Can't get the support, can't get anything. So she knows it too, whether she'll admit it or not. But Kennedy fascinates me though.
I think some of this is them fishing, right? Mm-hmm. I think because like you said, the Michelle Obama thing came out. I mean, you and I talked about it maybe a month ago.
Right.
But I haven't heard anything since. So you got to imagine there was a little bit of fishing, throw it out there, see what the public reaction is to that. See if it garners any interest or any, you know, gains any momentum. No, maybe not. Okay. Let's, mm-hmm, leave that alone. You know, maybe that's the same thing there that, you know, the DNC is doing with Newsom right now. Right.
Right. Just
throw it out there. See what it looks like. See what kind of reaction there is, you know, without coming out and saying, you know, President Biden is incompetent, incapable, you know, mm-hmm, not going to make it through the next 18 months, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
So I imagine there is some of this is fishing. I mean, you know, I think Vice President, you know, Harris, Kamala, your buddy, nobody was ever going to back her to be president within the first probably 6 months of this administration. She showed her cards or lack of capability right away. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a little bit of exploratory stuff going on to see who a viable candidate is in replacement for, you know, the sitting president. And I think, you know, they didn't want Kennedy. Like, I think they made that abundantly clear with the whole no Secret Service protection thing, right?
Yeah. Still blows my mind.
Right? You know, I'm a Kennedy. I got it. I got my own money. I don't really need you guys. I got name recognition. I'll do my own thing. I'll just run as an independent. So now they're, you know, they're trying to figure out what's next. And at the same time, you've got the entire, you know, fleet of GOP candidates that are still out there trying to figure out who's who. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a woman I'm drawing a blank on her name, Williamson over on the Democrat side. She's still in the running. She put herself forward there. She's an interesting character, I thought, but you know, again, just, there isn't the name recognition, you know. I mean, she would have to do something pretty wild. To me, in my humble opinion, she sounds like a cuckoo bird. You know, she calls herself a spiritual advisor or something. She wrote self-help, but you know, so she's crunchy granola, fruity, you know, all of those things. I don't know. Is she really that far out there? I have no idea. But, you know, just by reading the little bits about her, I'm like, oh, I had to dismiss it already. But I can't see it. You know, you're Gavin Newsom's. I could see you're Michelle Obama. I mean, that's actually the one I thought they would have pushed really hard because she checks so many boxes for them.
Oh, and, sure.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it's wow. I'm really surprised that we're not seeing more of that, but who knows? Like we keep saying, it's just too soon. There's so many wild things, you know, in the soap opera of our government going on that, I mean, you know, just sit back with your popcorn and wait for the next season to start.
Yeah. And you've got to believe that, you know, they've been relying upon James Carville for so many years to do
right.
Strategy, you know, election strategy for the party. And now he's basically come out and said, listen, all this super left, way left, crazy left stuff's got to stop. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's kind of, you know, the DNC itself is, you know, they're probably at an impasse. He's probably in a position of, listen, I'll tell you what I want to tell you. It's probably not what you want to hear, but I'm going to tell you whether you follow it or not is up to you. And they're not going to follow it. So there's probably some lack of direction right now, I would bet, sure. In the DNC. Lack of continuity for sure for them to plan out. And I think maybe that's why some of this fishing is going on to try and figure out. I'm sure Carville could sit down and go, hey, listen, you're option 1, 2, 3, you know, in his great Southern charm. And they should listen to him because he's far from stupid. I mean, the guy really is an expert. But they're not. So there's, you know, a lot of balls up in the air right now. And they just, you know, like you said, grab your popcorn because the next, you know, 12 months and, you know, 8 days or so are going to be very, very, you know, action packed, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I would say the American public right now is, and probably has been for quite some time. We're just looking for, well, there's people who love to keep fighting and keep the divide going on. But I would say the average moderate American is saying, can you just get somebody who's moderate on both sides? Give me a moderate from both sides and put those two head to head and let me pick from that. You know, I'm so tired of the extremes, you know, the extreme personalities, the extreme politics and all of that stuff. Can we just have some people who are, you know, sane? That would be nice, right?
American, like just somebody who's out for the good of America.
Yes.
Be, you know, a pleasant surprise, you know, that would be, you know, it would be pretty nice. You know, don't worry about the fringes. They're going to do what they do and just worry about, you know, the middle and doing right by them. And, you know, I think if that person found themselves, you know, with any kind of financial capability, any financial backing whatsoever, they'd probably go pretty far in the race. Truthfully.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, the problem with that is, and I think we both know it, and anybody watching probably knows it too, that anyone that fits that description, they don't want anything to do with politics. They don't want the job.
Yeah.
You know,
your statement. Yeah.
You can't get somebody like that to run, who is legitimately, sincerely the way that we need them to be.
Yeah.
And there's our quandary. There's our problem right there that, you know, we can't get the man or woman that we truly need to actually run for the job.
It's amazing. Years ago when I was, working on my master's degree, I was taking a personnel management, class, and the teacher walked in, the professor walked in one night, it was in night school, and she posed this question. And it was, why do the same, six, every time an NFL head coach is fired, why is it the same six or seven names come back up every time? They've been fired four times. The last two teams that they coached finished, three games under 500. They've not proven to be great coaches overall, but yet they're interviewed and considered to be hired over and over and over again. Why is that? And it was truthfully an hour long discussion about the pool is like this big. Like there's only so many people that you can draw from to be an effective, decent. And, this is 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. 15, 16, 17 years ago, there's only so many of those people that you can pull from that really can, that understand the job, understand the league itself, understand recruiting, understand the trade, and running for political office, especially federal level political office. How big is that pool? It's pretty small. And then you factor in not just can they, but do they want to, which is your point, right? There's probably a lot of people out there who are capable. Mm-hmm. But there are very few of them that really want to do that as a full-time job. And that's kind of where we're stuck.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I wish I had a good answer to that, but of course I don't. So hopefully somebody watching or listening does, and they can solve all of the problems. You know, wouldn't that be nice if somebody just swooped in and said, okay, listen, I got this. Here's what we need to do. Here's what we need. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. But, human nature and our country's nature is to, no matter who gets put forward, somebody is going to have a problem with it. Lots of somebody's going to have a problem. So, I guess that's the way it works in the nature of democracy, right?
Yeah. Which that kind of rolls us into our second topic,
it does.
So the next topic we're talking about tonight, for everybody out there, is the new Speaker of the House.
Yes.
And you talk about the process, right? So we're talking about Mike Johnson, and before we even get to him, it was obviously the ousting of McCarthy, and Mike Johnson is he's the fourth, right? He was the fourth candidate, and I think, Jordan, I think there was two going to be a third, vote maybe, or maybe there was a third and going to be a fourth before he backed out. And I think the next candidate behind him lasted a matter of hours. And the guy was like, nah, I'm not doing this. I don't even remember who it was. That's how short it was.
I don't even remember. It was so quick. It was like you heard a whisper and then they were gone.
Yep. So now we've got, Representative, now Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. But again, I hate to say it was due to lack of options, but they had to find somebody who was capable and wanted the job.
Yeah.
Right? And that was one of the harder things to do. It was, find somebody that both could get elected, essentially passed within the vote within the House and wanted to do the job at the same time. Not an easy thing to do.
No, especially based on what just happened to McCarthy. They got to be sitting there going, I don't know if I want this, because, look, how quick the tables can turn on me. And, could this potentially be career suicide? Really? So, it's a big ask. And the other the funny big ask is, and I can admit, I said, who the heck is Mike Johnson? Right. I don't know who he is. And that was like the collective question. It was like, who is this guy? Where did he come from? And how did he get in this spot? And, so of course everybody started scrambling to get news on him. And if you're conservative, particularly if you're a conservative Christian on the right, you're going, oh, I love this guy. I love this guy. He's the hero we need right now. And of course, if you're on the left, your head is spinning and you're spitting fire and you're absolutely appalled and horrified for the same reasons that the Christian conservative right loves him. I would say cautiously tentative, maybe loves him. You know, we
cautiously optimistic. That's what you're cautiously optimistic.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, as a good politician does, he says the things that you want to hear and gives a great rousing speech. Actually, you know what? We have his speech. Let's play that. The whole thing was like probably about 15, 17 minutes. I was able to get it down to like 5 minutes. So I got the highlights. So let's give that a watch.
I want to thank my dedicated wife of almost 25 years, Kelly. She's not here. We couldn't get a flight in time. This happened sort of suddenly. But we're going to celebrate soon. She spent the last couple of weeks on her knees in prayer to the Lord, and she's a little worn out. We all are. I want to say to the American people, on behalf of all of us here, we hear you. We know the challenges you're facing. We know that that there's a lot going on in our country, domestically and abroad, and we are ready to get to work again to solve those problems, and we will. Our mission here is to serve you well, to restore the people's faith in this house, in this great and essential institution. We stand at a very dangerous time. I'm stating the obvious. We all know that. The world is in turmoil. But a strong America is good for the entire world. I believe that Scripture, the Bible, is very clear that God is the one that raises up those in authority. He raised up each of you, all of us. And I believe that God has ordained and allowed each one of us to be brought here for this specific moment in this time. It was in 1962 that our national motto, "In God We Trust," was adorned above this rostrum. And if you look at the little guide that they give tourists and constituents who come and visit the house, if you turn in there to about page 14 in the middle of that guide, it tells you the history of this. And it says very simply, these words were placed here above us. This motto was placed here as a rebuke of the Cold War era philosophy of the Soviet Union. That philosophy was Marxism and communism, which begins with the premise that there is no God. This is a critical distinction that is also articulated in our nation's birth certificate. We know the language well, the famous second paragraph that we used to have children memorize in school, and they don't do that so often anymore, but they should. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, not born equal, created equal. And they are endowed by the same inalienable rights, with the same inalienable rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. That is the creed that has animated our nation since its founding, that has made us the great nation that we are. Our nation's greatest ally in the Middle East is under attack. The first bill that I'm going to bring to this floor in just a little while will be in support of our dear friend Israel, and we're overdue in getting that done. We're going to show not only Israel, but the entire world, that the barbarism of Hamas that we have all seen play out on our television screens is wretched and wrong, and we are going to stand for the good in that conflict. We have a catastrophe at our southern border. The Senate and the White House can no longer ignore the problem. From Texas to New York, wave after wave of illegal migrants are stressing our communities to their breaking points. We know that our streets are being flooded with fentanyl, and all of our communities, children, and even adults are dying from it. The status quo is unacceptable. Inaction is unacceptable, and we must come together and address the broken border. We have to do it. Everybody in this room should think about this. Here's the stats. Prices have increased over 17% in the last 2 years. Credit card interest rates are at the highest level in nearly three decades, and mortgage rates are now at a peak we haven't seen since 2001. We have to bring relief to the American people by reining in federal spending and bringing down inflation. The greatest threat to our national security is our nation's debt. And while we've been sitting in this room, that's right, that the debt has crossed almost $33.6 trillion. And we are going to establish a bipartisan debt commission to begin working on this crisis immediately. Immediately. We all know that we also live in a time of bitter partisanship. It was noted. And it's been on display here today, right? When our people are losing their faith in government, when they're losing sight of the principles that made us the greatest nation in the history of the world, I think we got to be mindful of that. We're going to fight. We're going to fight vigorously. I call them the seven core principles of American conservatism, but let me concede to you all, I think it's really quintessentially the core principles of our nation. I boil them down to individual freedom, limited government, the rule of law, peace through strength, fiscal responsibility, free markets, and human dignity. Those are the foundations that made us the extraordinary nation that we are. And you and I today are the stewards of those principles. But I've made a commitment to my colleagues here that this Speaker's office is going to be known for decentralizing the power here. My office is going to be known for members being more involved and having more influence in our processes and all the major decisions that are made here, for predictable processes and regular order. My office is going to be known for trust and transparency and accountability, for good stewardship of the people's treasure. Last thing I'm going to say is a message to the rest of the world. And we want our allies around the world to know that this body of lawmakers is reporting again to our duty stations. Let the enemies of freedom around the world hear us loud and clear. The People's House is back in business.
Okay, so I mean, a lot of bold proclamations there, a lot of bold statements. He is putting his faith right out there, front and center, no bones about it. And, you know, very well spoken. So, you know, I'm surface impressed. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think, one, I give him credit for staying honest to who he is. You know, I think one of the first things that he did after being sworn in, invited, you know, those of faith, of Christian faith, to come and pray with him on the floor of the House, which, again, is a bold thing to do, unfortunately, in today's day and age, as strange as that is to say. But so I give him credit for that. I think, you know, the statements that he's making are the statements that need to be made from his position, from his new job. But I think probably the most noteworthy thing in this entire is his age. Mm-hmm. When was the last time that somebody who not only is younger, but looks younger, got put into a position like this, you know, in a, you know, a leadership position?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is growth. This is progress. This is what most of America has been waiting for. You know, the fight between the two 80-year-olds to get into the White House is ridiculous. I mean, that's the best we can do right now. You know, and then you go back, McCarthy wasn't a young man. Nancy Pelosi is, you know, like,
she's keeper.
Yeah. Father time and mother nature's firstborn. You know, I mean, she's been around forever. So to see someone who's a little younger, on the younger side, at least as far as Washington, D.C. is concerned, you know, in a position like this is promising, I think, for everybody. Now, we'll see how long it lasts.
Right. Yeah. You know, they're already trying to, you know, to find things, dig up stuff and things. And, you know, so for anybody who doesn't know, I took down kind of the basics on who Mike Johnson is. As you said, on the younger side, from what we've been seeing otherwise, he's 51 years old. He's been married for nearly 25 years to his wife. They have four kids. He's from Louisiana. He's, I guess, in his fourth term, or was in his fourth term when all this came about. He practiced constitutional law for 20 years, which I think is very valuable to know in his position. He is generally considered well-liked, but he's also considered to be kind of milquetoast. That was the exact word I actually, on my notes, I actually put it in quotations, you know. So, okay. So because he's a socially conservative, as we talked about, he is, you know, on the liberal, you know, hate list, of course. And what else? A couple of the big ones, Trump ally, a supporter of Trump. And of course that will put some people off within the party, or has put some people off, I'm sure. And he was a part of a suit in Texas to decertify, the election results in, Texas and like three other states. And, you know, so that gives, probably some eyebrow raising for some people. And yeah, I mean, I guess as with everything, time will tell. We'll see if he's a man of his word. Like I said, he put a lot of bold statements out there of what he's going to do in his position. So let's see if he can do it, right?
Well, and he's already taken fire. You know, I mean, just from the simple prayer, right? He is a man of faith. He doesn't hide that. You know, it's definitely out there. I've already heard the phrase, let me make sure I get this right, far right fascist theocracy. That was,
yes, I did see that.
Because yeah. He is a practicing Christian, he is now a far right extremist, religious extremist, you know, pushing fascism, religious fascism in the United States.
Right.
Like yeah. In a day, like literally in a day.
That's in a day, he's going to, yeah, he's good grief. It does make you shake your head, doesn't it? And he did respond to that. I don't know. I could probably pull it up at some point, but he did respond to that, basically said, listen, I'm not making everyone become Christians. Like, that's not what I'm about. You know, I mean, I'm not going to stop anybody from believing what they believe. This is simply who I am and what I believe. And, you know, and from my perspective, it's like, how about have a little respect and appreciation for somebody who does stand for their convictions and doesn't, you know, sway whichever way the wind blows to you know, be popular. So, but yeah, well, listen, no surprise. I mean,
the squad's shown us, right, especially in the last 3 weeks,
yes,
you can stand for your convictions and you can stand for religious convictions tied to political convictions.
Right.
As long as you're not a conservative.
Yes.
It's okay to do it the other direction. Right.
Right.
But it's not okay, you know, to do it if you're a conservative. And that's, you know, that's the frustration. That's the divide that exists. Again, in a day, he became a, you know, religious fascist, extremist, theocrat, whatever they called him, you know, in a day. Immediate attack, divide, no attempt for, you know, to bridge the gap at all. It was immediately... Nope. Tear him down as fast as humanly possible. And that's unfortunately the way both politics, especially in the House, are kind of operating, or in Congress in general, but also portrayed in mainstream media. Like who went to mainstream media, or what mainstream media outlet came up with that everybody else jumped on it and went, yes, that's the storyline we're going with. Mm-hmm. And it went everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, because it's not helping in a day. That is just so counterproductive. It's not even funny.
Right. So, you know, I'm sorry.
No, it's super frustrating that at every turn, and both sides are guilty, and the entire mainstream media, I don't care what network you listen to or watch, they're all guilty of it. The fact that we as a nation can't even attempt to establish, you know, a bridge building, you know, effort, because it's torn down by those in the Beltway and those on the television at first opportunity is one of the most frustrating things there is for me as an American citizen. It's appalling.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with specific relation to Mike Johnson and that response he had to those comments, to those, you know, accusations, essentially is what they are. I also liked, you know, that he pointed to his Christian faith and in a true, you know, I know there's a lot and understandable argument over Christians and their beliefs and how they live their lives and how they share their beliefs and all of that stuff. But, you know, the core of Christianity is to love God, love people, and which is exactly what he stated in, you know, in his response to that. You know, he says, I don't know, basically paraphrasing quite a bit, obviously, but he was like, listen, I don't know what to tell you. You know, as a Christian, it's love God, love people. And that's what I intend to do. And I said, okay, he's saying the right true things, you know, just walk the walk, you know, don't just talk the talk, keep walking the walk. And it's, you know, it tremendously, I fail, daily at that. No problem with the love God. Love people, they make it hard. They make it hard, Clay, don't they?
Sure. Yeah. And you know, again, I give him a lot of credit for being out there with it. He doesn't seem to manipulate it to his, you know, advantage. Right. You know, I grew up, outside of Chicago, and if you want to say it pronouncedly in a Chicago accent, in a Catholic house, right?
Whoa.
Catholic.
I
went to Catholic school for 8 years. You know, the president is Catholic. The former Speaker of the House is Catholic. When it suits them,
right?
And listen, I'm non-practicing. Haven't in a long time. God and I have a great relationship. I don't, you know, outwardly practice. I don't go to church. I don't go to mass. But I don't profess to be anything that I'm not either, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, if you profess to be a Catholic, I know what that looks like because I spent a good portion of my life looking at that in the mirror. And I know what the beliefs of the church are. And I can tell you that I know it's a great debate in America, but the former Speaker of the House, Pelosi, and the current President Biden are not practicing Catholics. They're not practicing the beliefs of the church. And you know, our current Speaker of the House, like you said, seems to be walking the walk and talking the talk. And we'll see how long that lasts. I will give him the benefit of the doubt, as you have. He seems to be that guy. But again, we'll see how long that lasts. And I hope that it lasts for his entire tenure. I really hope that's who he is, because I think as a nation built on a Judeo-Christian belief system, our justice system, our morals and ethics of this nation are built on those things, have been since the, you know, the founding fathers. I hope that he has that and he, you know, continues to bring that back unabashedly. Be unashamed in who you are. I'd rather have that than somebody who manipulates their religion to their benefit, you know, when an election cycle rolls around or when there's a prop opportunity with the press. So, you know, good on him. You know, he's not
absolutely.
Me. I'm not him, but good for him for being who he is.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it gives me a little bit of hope in that he brought it up and brought it out at a time where it doesn't really serve him any major purpose. Like, you got the job, you're in, you know, so, you know, that's interesting that he made the choice to say, you know, right here, right now, everybody's watching, here's who I am, you know, and, very bold, very bold. And I think the right kind of bold. So it'll be, it's going to be, you know, like we keep saying, I feel like we have to say it every darn episode too, to, you know, remind everybody, just get your popcorn,
grab that popcorn,
right?
Yeah.
Keep start getting your, I don't know, pop secret. I don't know, whatever you get.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, there's the next GOP debate, I think, is next week, next Tuesday.
Ooh, that'll be fun.
Yeah. More for us to talk about. So,
yes, I can't wait. I'm excited for it. Sort of.
Hopefully better than the last one. You know,
I mean, it's kind of been the problem. They've been kind of, you know, sleepy, but that's okay. That's all right. The next one should be interesting. Maybe.
Well it's going to be smaller. That's for
right.
Sure.
Which I think helps, you know, it's kind of hard when you have a lot of people up there and everybody's got to get their FaceTime and get their, you know, moment. And, you never really get any meat. You never get any real substance. Yeah. So as the playing field narrows, you know, hopefully we'll get some more substance and more insight into these people and, you know, see who they really are when the pressure's on like that. But I think we should take that switch. We're going to step out of politics. We're going to talk about Matthew Perry. This is actually really sad. And I know there's going to be some people that are like, an actor, whoop-de-doo, an actor died, big whoop. But you know, to be honest with you, I haven't been hearing a lot of that. I've been seeing and hearing, exceptional amounts of, sadness, disbelief, heartbreak over it, which, you know, a lot of times I kind of balk when somebody is expressing like a complete stranger, just an average person is saying, you know, my heart is so broken. Yeah. I can't believe he's gone, because it's just weird, you know, to, I don't get that type of deep connection, but what I do get is the nostalgia and the sentimentality. I mean, this is a guy along with his castmates that, you know, a huge portion of the country and other countries too, spent their whatever night it was on. I don't even know, to tell you the truth, but spent their, let's just say Thursday for the sake of, you know, spent their Thursday nights in front of the TV watching these people and laughing with them and enjoying their character's journey. So you do get attached, and I 100% get that. But Matthew Perry, boy, oh boy, 54 years old. We still don't know cause of death, right? That's the latest. We don't know the cause of death still. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, you and I are of the Friends generation, you know, I mean, we really, like, we are in that sweet spot. Like, we watched the 10 years of that show. We're of the perfect age. You know, his character Chandler is iconic. I mean, that guy brought sarcasm to an entirely new level.
Yes.
And really was a great character. And I think through the years, you know, and really since the show ended, it's become more, you know, public knowledge. He struggled with you know, substance abuse and addiction over the years, you know, multiple times it sounded like, you know, recovering and then failing and then recovering, which is not uncommon for anybody who struggles with that. And I give him a ton of credit for somebody who kept trying, right? He kept going back. He kept, you know, picking himself up out of the dirt and trying again and trying to be better and those kinds of things. And you know, he's one of those people that, you know, tried very, very hard to please everybody. That was why he was so good as that character, was he just wanted to make everybody around him laugh. That was his only goal. But yeah, at 54 years old, even with a history of substance abuse, right, and addiction, 54 years old is still incredibly young for anybody to pass away. Now, there, like you said, cause of death is still unknown. There are some things that came out right away. There were no, he had been sober for a number of weeks. I think somewhere in the 3 to 6 week range at a minimum before he died. There were no drugs found on the scene. I think initial reports are saying no drugs or, you know, found in his system. And no alcohol, which, you know, there's always that danger with a hot tub, right? You're not supposed to drink alcohol and sit in a hot tub. You know, that is a life-threatening kind of thing. But the speculation is cardiac arrest. That's what I'm hearing. Again, for everybody out there, that is speculation.
Right.
There's been no, the coroner's report has not, you know, definitively said what the cause of death was, but I've heard most of the speculation is it's cardiac related, cardiac arrest type incident is what unfortunately, you know, took his life, whatever it was, 3 or 4 days ago. But yeah, incredibly tragic, very, very sad for those around him, for all of us that watched him for 10 years, watch the reruns now and listen.
Absolutely.
In today's society, some of the stuff that's on Friends has not aged well. Still funny.
It's still funny.
Good sense of humor. It's still funny. But there's some stuff on there that hasn't aged well in today's eyes. But really a seemingly a great person, you know, and really a loss, I think, just in his personality, his sense of humor, his performances, as specifically as Chandler. He did a number of other things. He did movies, you know, the whole nine yards. The whole 10 yards. I think there was a sequel with Bruce Willis and, you know, he did some other things along the way, but he really was a talented guy when it came to comedy and just making people laugh.
Yeah, absolutely. He really was. And I did, you know, like most people kind of went back and watched a lot of those clips that people are putting up and you do, you have those moments where you're like, oh God, I remember that scene. That was so funny. Wow. He was really, really good. He was really good. And, And I know there's people that are going to watch and listen or who've seen the reports and everything and roll their eyes and say, there's so many more important things going on in the world than some actor's death. And, you know, my answer to that would be, he's like so many shows that we either grew up with or just watched in our lifetime. That was part of the fabric of our lives. I mean, we get so many, quotes and mannerisms and sayings from these shows that you don't even realize that what you're doing or saying is from a show. You know, I mean, how many take Seinfeld, for example, yada, yada, yada. You know how many people were saying that for forever? It's because of the show, and Friends is no different. You know, if you say the word pivot, the scene comes to everybody's mind immediately. And if you know, you know, and of course, you know, you all know. And, you know, the thing of that show with him in particular, that now when you look back watching it over the seasons, when you know after the fact that he was struggling throughout that entire series with addiction. And I believe he said at some point that when I was skinny, I was on, you know, this particular drug. And when I was heavy, I was on this, you know. So imagine being him and looking back at what is an iconic career, really, iconic role, and only seeing your addiction and your illness throughout. It's very, very sad to me, you know, that he should be able to, or anybody should be able to look on their work with pride and joy. And that's what he looked, had to look at, you know, and see through that lens. One of the things that I love about reading about him is that throughout his whole addiction and recovery process, he actually, I believe he started like a home for addicts. I think it was called like Perry House, that people, you know, if you were struggling and trying to get clean, you could go there and get help. So even through all of his struggles, he was trying to help other people. And I think that's, you know, so, so commendable and noble and worthy of sharing, because to have gone through that, like so many celebrities and famous people do, everything they do is in the public eye. So, you know, he had to go through that and the ridicule. I mean, you know, the memes that were made and just the mean spiritedness of people who got enjoyment, you know, humor out of his suffering is insane. It's crazy even how vicious.
If you go back to the reunion show that they had just a few years ago, right? He was, you know, clearly, I think they came back and said that he had had a procedure or, you know, had been on some sort of anesthetic or something, was being treated for something. You know, he clearly was not on the night of that. I mean, there was definitely, he was off. He was a little speech slurred. You know, he wasn't what everybody anticipated. Yeah. And there was very little sympathy. There was very little, there was a lot of concern, but there was also a lot of, guess Matthew Perry's back on the sauce or whatever. You know, people just immediately jumped to those conclusions because we all did know by that point in time that he had struggled for so many years off and on. But, you know, and this is not, you know, we're not trying to make this political, but there is something to this. And we talked about him being 54, you know, which is too young for anybody, even in a life, in a history of adult life of substance abuse and addiction that he battled as much and as often as he did. 54 is still young for somebody who is reportedly clean and sober.
Right.
Right. Yes, I understand there's a toll that it takes on your heart. There is, you know, all of those things, right? It does wear on your body, that addiction does. But he was an advocate for the vaccine, right?
Yes.
And right. It's, he wasn't shy about it. So I'm not going to be shy about it, but there's, you know, he was big into pushing the vaccine, you know, through COVID.
Right.
But this is another point of another data point where we collectively need to go back and look at how the vaccines were developed. This is someone massively in the public eye. This is not, you know, an unfortunate, you know, 20-something, you know, male out on a basketball court having a cardiac arrest that nobody knows or nobody's ever heard of, except for the other nine guys on the court. You know what I mean? It's not that. This is a celebrity very much in the public eye who has clearly passed away before what anyone would consider normal.
Right.
Who was a big advocate for the vaccine.
Yeah. So I mean, it's hard not to ask,
should
right?
raise eyebrows, right? Like this should, you know, prompt somebody, I don't care who it is, somebody to go back and look at this, right? That's
right.
That's, should be the normal reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's definitely, you know, and of course they get labeled conspiracy theorists for even mentioning that. So welcome to the club of, you know, being labeled conspiracy theorists for asking a very reasonable question based on data and proof that this is causing some serious cardiac issues in quite a few people. And yeah. And like you said, I mean, I'll pull the picture up again. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to read the text there. I certainly can't without my glasses on, but, you know, he's basically saying that, you know, he's super jabbed is what he's saying, more or less paraphrasing again. So yeah, I mean, it is worth questioning and looking at to see if it had any kind of relationship and you know, I would assume, I would think that the coroners would do that. I don't know if we're going to find out anything. But speaking of that, there are, of course, you know, theories and conspiracies that have, you know, are running rampant right now, at least over on the TikTok. You know, you mainstream regular media people maybe don't know these inside things. But there's lots of people talking about, he wrote a memoir. It is called Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. And it's fairly recent. I mean, it's within the past couple few years that he wrote it. And people are making a very big deal about the last chapter in his memoir. He's talking about calling himself Batman or Mattman or something like that. And they're making these ties that, you know, he hadn't posted anything on Instagram and in months and months. And then all of a sudden there was like a strange flurry of posts from him and, you know, with the moon and Batman and calling himself Mattman. So, you know, what they're suggesting apparently and clearly is that this was not a natural death, that, you know, there was some foul play. I can't imagine why there would be. Nobody's really coming up with that I've seen. In this moment, I do think it's, you know, a little tinfoil hatty. I would say based on, I mean, this guy, he really had, and I didn't know this until I looked this up, but let me just read this to you guys, because it's a little breathtaking, what he went through medically. I had no idea. I think you're going to be shocked too, Clay. So in 2018, he had, multiple medical episodes, pneumonia. This I've never heard of in my life, but I'm going to just read what it says. Exploded colon. That's what it says. He was on life support for a period of time. And he was in a 2-week coma, and, he had for 9 months, he had a colostomy bag and numerous, or multiple stomach surgeries. I mean, so this guy went through it. I mean, like big time. And I have no idea, and I won't even speculate if that had anything to do with his addictions and drug issues. I don't know if they're related or not, but suffice to say, the guy went through a lot of stuff medically. So I have a hard time believing that there could be any foul play.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, with a medical history like that. Now, he is, you know, again, going to the vaccine and really following the guidelines from the CDC and everybody else at the time, right. You know, he would fall into that predisposed category.
Yes.
Right. I mean, he would be one of those people that would be, you know, at risk, predisposed. So, of course, if he was following the guidelines of the medical community, yeah, he would go get the vaccine, and yes, he would go get the boosters, and because that's what everybody was being told to do. And
right,
you know, he, again, I don't blame him. This is not a fault thing as far as he is concerned, but again,
right,
it's all there, it's all public, it's all on record because he made it that way. But we, as, and he's not alone. unfortunately. There's been a right. number of athletes, high world-class level athletes, who have fallen victim to the same thing, cardiac arrest. Yes. People who've been, you know, who are super active cardio people, random, you know, at a higher level, higher occurrence mm-hmm. level than previous to the vaccine, are right. falling victim to this. But this, he gives this the potential for a public face. And I sure. hate that his face becomes the face for this. He should yeah. always be the face for Chandler Bing, right?
Yeah.
He should always be that face.
Yeah.
But if this, you know, if this brings some light to that and it spurs somebody to do some investigating, you know, on behalf of everybody else who, you know, has the potential to follow the same thing, then I think we benefit, as horrible as that sounds, we benefit from him passing right. away at such a young age. But yeah, really absolutely. You know,
right.
Just terrible. Super yep. funny guy. You know, like I said, the level of sarcasm he delivered was just unmatched.
He could have done a master class on sarcasm, sure. right? Yeah. That would have been actually brilliant if he had done something like that. That'd be really, really cool. But yeah, I mean, Clay, I think that sums it up perfectly. It is simply whether you liked him or not, whether you care about celebrities or not, it is a tragedy. It's very sad. And, you know, it makes me sad. That's all I can say about it. It makes me sad. And yeah. I agree with you. I do hope that it does spurn at least some more questioning from people who wouldn't have necessarily been questioning beforehand. So hopefully that does at the very least that. But he left a great legacy. And phenomenal memories for so many people. And I wish all his loved ones and people who care about him peace and all of that kind of stuff. I can't believe an hour is already up. I just looked at the time. I'm like, are you kidding me? How did that even happen? I feel like we just started a minute ago.
Yeah. Listen, I did the same thing last week when I was by myself. I looked up and I was like, whoa, boy, have I been running my mouth. So good to have you back, obviously. So I'm not just the one, you know, we run our collective mouths for an hour and it goes very, very quickly. But I'm glad to have you back this week, obviously. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And since you're back, we'll keep saying that, we're welcoming Elsa back to her own show. From me, keep moving, keep shooting, but you go ahead and close it out tonight.
Thank you, my friend. It is great to be back. I missed you all, but I'm so glad to have Clay who can take the reins and carry the show with style and ease. But I am happy to be back. And as always, we would absolutely love to hear from you. Tell us your thoughts on tonight's topics and give us some ideas that you'd like to hear for the next show. And until then, take care and we'll see you guys in the next one. Bye-bye.